Blog Talk Radio.
So my show is supposed to be starting right now. Liam was supposed to put up a show for me, and something told me to come and check it out and make sure that my show was put up, and there's nothing here. But it doesn't matter because nobody's here yet. This is Jay King. This is the music business, the way I see it. We're going to I'm thinking about doing a rerun show, but since I'm here, I may just do it live. I don't know yet. I just want to see. I didn't really plan anything to talk about, but I guess, you know, we should talk. We can talk about so many different things. Oh, here it is right here. The show is right here, too. Here's the rebroadcast show, and I don't know why this show didn't show up, because it should have. So I'm going to play it right now, and hopefully you guys will enjoy the show. I don't know what show it is today. I'm waiting to see. It went right back to Gary Taylor, which it doesn't make any sense to me. Let me see if I can fix this, though. Hello, everybody. How you doing? This is Blog Talk Radio, so I'm not surprised by any of this at all. This is what Blog Talk Radio is.
No, I wasn't. You could ask for anything.
Welcome to the Jay King Network.
The Jay King Network, where the people come together. The Jay King Network, where the people come together.
The Jay King Network, where the people come together.
The people come together. The Jay King Network,
where the people come together.
My name is Jay King. My co-host is going to be Lynn Tolliver, because I am not at the con today. Business permitted me to do other things. And I got to say, Lynn, thank God my battery died. Okay? So Rodney, my cousin Rodney, I love him. He gave me this auxiliary battery that I can plug into my phone.
Okay?
And me being a pants that I am, I did not use this battery today until right now, because I wanted to, I wouldn't make it home in time. And I just happened to have a battery in my pocket. Otherwise, I could not do this show because my battery on my phone died.
Wow.
So, you know, thank God the auxiliary
small
battery.
Miracles, right?
Yeah, for my cousin Rodney. Yeah, thank you, cousin. Today our show is on technology and production, and you know how production has has developed along with technology, and has it hurt technology? I mean, has technology hurt production? You know, or has it helped production? And if so, how? What I want to do, Lynn, is I want to play a song right here. I'll play Foster Silver's Misdemeanor, and so I can get ready.
Okay.
All right. And we're gonna get our guests on.
Okay. Don't forget the telephone number is 347-205-9366. That's 347-205-9366. You're listening to the Jay King Network.
Oh.
Man, that was not the Foster Silver song I was looking for.
Yeah, and I don't see the Foster Silver song in
it. It's actually up front because it's in the first, it's in the top of the player.
I see it now.
Play that one. Foster that one, and then it's going to give me enough time because I'm...
Okay, you got it.
Love and devotion. If the tracks of us emotion, it's gonna put the sheets so
Misdemeanor. Lynn, I know you wonder, what is he doing?
I have an idea. I'm just kidding.
Yeah. I wish it was that sad.
You were running. You were running, right?
No, I was walking stage.
Okay.
Lynn, you know how sometimes you can do things that cut it close?
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes you can do things that cut it too close.
Yeah.
Today I cut it a little too close.
It happens.
But I believe John Wilson is in. If you see a 111, that's him.
Hey, okay. What's up? What's up, man?
Ricky, what's up? What's up, baby?
I'm hanging in there, man. Hey, east of yesterday, north of tomorrow, ain't touching dirt nowhere.
And then you might see a 916 number. If
right.
You see a 916, that's Derek Allen, 4271. If you see that, you might see a 310 number.
Yeah, that's Eric McAllister.
Yeah, you can open up his
in
line
in the building.
Yeah, he's
all right.
His line is open. Yeah.
Well.
And who else do we have here?
Eric McAllister, John Wilson, yourself, Big Swain.
Oh, Big Swain, how you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Now, Big Swain, let me ask you a question because I don't want to put you on mute before the show starts. Do you have me on speakerphone?
No.
Did you have me on speakerphone?
No.
Okay, did you have me on a headset?
Yeah, I got some headphones on.
Okay. If it starts to If it starts to echo, it's your headphones. That creates the automatic mute.
Is that okay now? Is it better now?
I'm Lynn.
There's
no,
something. I still hear an echo.
Yeah. You got to take them off.
Echo?
Yeah, it's an echo. So, Lynn, put him on mute.
Okay.
See? They don't believe fat meat is greasy.
Yeah.
Do we still have the echo?
No.
Okay, you know why we don't have the echo?
Because Big Swain is on mute.
Exactly. You know why? Big Swain being off mute caused the echo? Because he had a headset on.
Yeah.
Okay, you guys, so let's get into it. I don't know who's all, let me see, who we have. How you doing there?
916-271 is in now.
Oh, that would be Derek Allen. Derek, how you doing? Thank you for tuning in.
Hey, what's up, fellas? I'm good.
What's happening, Derek?
Hey, what's up, Derek?
Good, very good.
All right, great. So we have Derek Allen, John Wilson, Eric McAllister, and Eric McSwain. And we should be joined by Sam Bostic and Brian Morgan and Larry Dunn in a little while here. But today, you guys, we're talking about technology and production. And first of all, each of you, now let me ask you a question, Lynn. Did you take Eric McSwain off of mute?
Okay.
Did you? I asked you if you did.
Oh, no, I didn't.
Okay. Am I hearing an echo, or is that just me losing my mind?
I don't hear an echo.
Okay, I'm losing my mind. Okay. So I'd like to ask each of you, and I'm going to start with you, John, since you're the youngest. How long have you been producing records?
Huh?
How long have you been producing records?
Almost 40 years.
Derek, how long have you been producing records?
For me, about 20 years.
Eric McAllister, how long have you been producing records?
22 years.
McSwain?
20.
So, ladies and gentlemen, I just want you to know that you have some real experience sitting in front of you. It's a different degree.
And there's a 323 that's on now.
What's the
323-839.
Did they have the hand up?
Yes.
323-839, who's calling?
Nettlesby, I was just checking in. So
John Nettlesby, great. Okay, so John Nettlesby, how long have you been producing records?
Oh, man, shit. 39 years or something like that.
Okay. Forever. 39. John, you ain't but 39. How you been producing records for 39 years? You came out producing records, John?
Yes, sir. Okay, it's like probably about 35 years.
Okay. So, like I said, as you can see, we have a lot of record business experience on the phone today, record production experience. So today, you guys, what I want to talk about is technology and production. We're going to talk about production from the way it used to be done, because when I first came into the record business, and I've been producing records, you guys, for right around 26 years. And my first record was Rumors that I produced that was a big record, although I did produce a song called JoJo on Confunction in 1985 on that Burning Love CD that I thought was a hit smash record. And it went double wood, because you always think your records are hit smashes. I don't know anybody who produces records, a record and says, look at this boo-boo I'm producing. Most people that produce music and write songs, they think they're writing the greatest songs in the world. Otherwise, they wouldn't do it. But production has changed so much from when I first started producing records. I remember the first time I went into a 24-track studio and lost my mind, because I thought I had all the tracks in the world until I had to do some vocal parts, some background parts. And we used to do this thing called fly 'em in,
We used to have to fly the background parts in, and we'd fly them onto a stereo track. So what we'd do is we'd do the background vocals and stack them, and then we'd mix them down to a two-channel, one-inch, half-inch. And then that half-inch, we would the engineer would tell you now, and you press the button, and your vocals would start singing along with the track, and if you did it just right, you fit right in. Today you don't have to do that. You have unlimited tracks. You have the ability to do a lot of different things because of technology. But has production been compromised because of technology? Have we learned how to cheat creativity so much that you don't have to be really creative or talented in order to be known as a great producer? Do producers really understand production today? Do they understand arrangements? Do they understand the theory of music? Those are the questions we're going to ask today. And that's our subject matter. So let me ask you, fellas, before we get deep into it, in each of you guys can start with from McSwain on up. I'll start with you first, McSwain. How did you get into production? What made you get into music production? How old were you and how did it start? Keep it brief.
I was playing in a band, and we went into the studio to record, and when we went into the studio, it was my first time. I saw that big old long board sitting there, and I was like, hold it, I'm doing the wrong thing. This is what I want to do. And that's what started.
What about you, Eric McAllister?
Mine was simple. I was sitting at the Budweiser Superfest, and something just told me, you can do the same damn thing. So next day I went home, ordered the equipment, and started from there.
Okay. And what year was that?
1988.
Okay. And 1988. 24 years, okay. And what about you, Derek?
For me, it was, I started as a bass player, and I toured with so many musicians. And I, at the height of my career as a touring musician, I was playing with Janet Jackson, man, on the Rhythm Nation tour. And after that, I said to myself, wow, man, I don't want to go back. So what's the next thing? Bigger than Janet was Mike, and Mike already had his band. So I said, wow, I got to get do the next thing. I started just went in the studio, man, and started demoing up music. And lo and behold, man, out the blue, I got a call from Bobby Brown out the middle of nowhere, wanted me to come play bass for him.
Did he get disconnected or did I get disconnected?
Derek's call just dropped.
Okay, so we'll come back to him. But you, Mr. Nettlesby. Is John Nettlesby still there?
Yeah.
Why can't we hear him? Is his line open?
Yes, his line is open.
So he has a cell phone mute.
Can you hear me?
Yeah, I muted myself so I wouldn't have that noise in the background. Man, for me it started similar. I was playing in a band, writing songs, and we went in the studio. I was managed by Monty White. It was Maurice White's little brother, Earth, Wind & Fire. And we were in the studio, and we were going to mix the record, and it was Paul Serrano, so I'll never forget. He said, what could you stand to hear less of in this mix? And I always say, well, on these Earth, Wind & Fire records, we can hear everything, right? I mean, they got bass, percussion, singers, rhythm section, orchestra. And he was like, it comes down to production and arrangement. If you want to hear everything, you have to know when to place different things. And I was so fascinated with that, with just being able to know how I could hear, like Earth, Wind & Fire, they got Gregorian chants and orchestras and African percussion and rhythm. It was like, the art of trying to be able to incorporate all those elements in the song you have to know what you're doing from an arrangement perspective. And then from a sonic perspective, like a bass, if you got a heavy bass drum and a heavy bass line, it's going to turn into mush because the frequencies will cancel each other out. So it was just like a puzzle. It was like the most fascinating thing.
And what year was that?
Oh, man, probably 1974, 75.
Wow. And what about you, John?
Well, you know, Sly Stick and Wicked, we had left Paramount and just signed with James Brown. But in Cleveland, we also had our big brothers, the OJs. And so Walt said, hey, man, you know, you ever tried to produce? I said, no. And so we had a sister group called Silk Satin and Lace. And so Walt Williams with OJs and myself took them in the studio and started producing them. So that was my first time producing, and that was 1973-74.
Now, you guys, from the time that you, and I'm going to start with you, John, since you were the last person talking, from the time that you first started producing records till today, what are some of the big differences that you see from when you started to now?
Well, you said 24-track. Our first song was recorded on 16-track. That was the thing of the day. And so I saw, you know, that tech, you know, of course the technology and more tracks, you know, because, again, you know, I saw it going from 16 to 24. So it's a big change, but to me, there's a lot of creativity mixing. Just like you said, Jay, you did a lot of tracks, then you had to fly the backgrounds in. You know, you were also limited because you couldn't bounce from, like, to an adjacent track. You had to bounce a track over. So you don't have to do that now. But, again, the creativity, because you always had to be thinking on your toes. There was no such thing as a computer. Everybody was live. So everybody had to be on one accord in order to make a recording. So it was much more a thought process, you know, then,
uh-huh.
than it is now.
Well, but John?
Yes.
John Nettlesby, I should say.
Just call me Fly. Just kidding, you're not a separated.
Yeah, I'm just calling you Fly.
Okay.
Nettlesby?
Yes, sir.
How about for you?
Yeah, same thing. I think what's missing is the difference is the interaction. Right, like back in the day, you know, you'd had a drummer.
Well, what's the biggest difference? So that's the biggest difference you see from today versus then is the interaction. Go ahead.
Yeah, from the difference, the biggest difference between from then and now in terms of.
Correct.
In terms of what, which aspect?
Yeah, no, I'm just saying you said the interaction. Go ahead. I just wanted to make sure that the people heard the question, got back acquainted with the question again, and then I just. Gave it right back to you.
Okay, so there it is. Okay, so technology, because now one person has an ability to really control the recording, it's a big difference from back in the day. You had a drummer, you had a bass player. The drummer would never play the drum pattern the way you wanted him to play it, but he would play it the way a drummer plays. The bass player would never play the bass line exactly the way you wanted him to play it, the way a bass player plays. So what would happen is, while you were recording the record, you'd be mad or feel some kind of way, and then when you listen back to it later and you realize that they played exactly what was, you know, what that instrument would play, then you felt so good about the recording. You were going, man, I would have never done that. And in today's world with sequencers and drum machines, you can play exactly what you want to play, and then later on everything has this real homogenous vibe to it, and it doesn't have the quirks and the idiosyncrasies of a band, you know? I remember seeing that Steely Dan thing when they had Chuck Rainey, and he said they didn't want him to do any thumping or plucking on Peg, but he said the thumping was the thing to do at the time. So whenever the chorus would come up, he kind of turned his bass to the side so they couldn't see him, and then he would start thumping. And then that's the whole hump of that entire hook of that Steely Dan record is that chorus where he's thumping. You would think they would have, you know, surely they would have wanted him to do that, but that was the nature of musicianship. A musician would play what was their respective roles would lead them to play, and not necessarily what our limited, you know, creativity would have us have the individual people play. So I think that's what's missing, the interaction. Good.
Okay. What about you, Derek?
Wow, the biggest thing, the difference with technology today is versus then is real simple, man. You do not have to have an ounce of talent to make a record, a number one record.
And technology, I love it, Jay, because of the reasons that you explained it at the top of the show. It's great for producers and it's convenient. But what's happening now is that, you know, when my son, who's never touched an instrument, you know, or when your son or when John's son, whoever, can just go to a computer and manipulate it and make music and it be a number one record because corporate America says so. That's the sad part. That's where technology has hurt music. That's why music sucks today. Music, corporate American commercial music, because of what everybody's saying. John Nettlesby, you just hit on some really good stuff. You know that you had to play. And Jay, we talked earlier. You talked about pouring your soul into your music. Nowadays, you don't have to do that, man. But back then, that's what we had to do. We had no choice. We had to play. But right now, you know, and I'm not mad at it because I totally understand it and I get it. Right now, you know, for technology, we can manipulate a computer. We can manipulate your iPhone and make a beat. And, you know, and somebody, some idiot at a record company will fall in love with it just because it's some cool shit. And they'll put it out. And so to me, that's how technology has hurt the music game, because right now there's no heart and soul in music. Music is real sterile because true musicians don't have the opportunity to express no more and be accepted by corporate America, so to say. And what I mean by just commercializing.
But why do we say that, I mean, with technology, and I agree with you, that a lot of people, you know, to me, a lot of mediocre creative people can actually become great because technology becomes a great crutch for them to lean on. But by the same token, it also opens up so many doors so that the musicians can play, so that the talented people succumb to the corporate structure that's in front of them, so that, you know, the creative person can be creative. Don't you guys think that technology, has helped tenfold versus the things that we say hurt?
Well, I'll start. This is John Sly. I'll start with that. I think in a way, for example, when I'm in the studio, you know, being Sly, Sick, and Wicked, you know, instead of singing, you know, the background, you know, the 20 times on the vamp out, you know, yeah, I can just copy and paste that. But on the other end, just like John Nettlesby was saying, you know, you had guys, man, like session drummers, like James Gadson, you know. You had cats that never basically went out, you know, on the tour, but laid in the studio, Willie Weeks, you know, people like that. So when you put a session, now hear the word I'm going to use. When you call a session to, you know what I'm saying, call a session, that means that at least you got seven people in there, including the engineer, that all has to be on one accord. So, yeah, the editing is faster. Yeah, that I like that. But what is missing, just like what you said, Derek said, you got one cat in here. Barry White told me this in 1980. He says, there's going to come a day, John, when you and I are sitting on this board, and it will be the whole orchestra, where Barry used to carry 64 pieces, all right? You know, so I think that's what's missing, but yeah, it's faster editing and everything, and I get that. But the creativity, we have settled for mediocrity instead of for excellence. That's what the audience is settled for.
Anybody else want to chime in on that?
I agree.
I agree with Sly. I mean, why did you guys say? How have we settled? I haven't settled for mediocrity. Derek, I just listened to a whole album you produced. You haven't settled for mediocrity.
Right.
Why are we?
Right.
Why?
But check this. So, dig this, Jay. Dig this. Dig this. Let's keep it. Let's park it right there for a second. We talked about doing a string section on Karen White's record, right? And we had all these people submitting budgets for strings, right? Mm-hmm. Kind of over the budget, right? At mm-hmm. the end of the day, it came to us using these string machines and sounds that's happening now that's just as good that people are selling for. And trust me, there's some dope, and Nettlesby, you know, there's some dope stuff out there. that can really make it sound good. And if you got the right person manipulating that computer, they can really make that stuff. I do it all the time, Jay. And one reason why I'm because I am a musician.
But
what it does is it puts a lot of people out of work. It puts the orchestra out of work. You take it, everything that we're talking
The car put the horse and carriage out of work. People that built wheels and carriages went out of. What's the advancement?
It's twofold, though, Jay. It's twofold, man. It's a good thing, but it's also a bad thing because you're talking about keeping musicians working. Do we need musicians? Do I need Larry Dunn? No, I could do a whole session by myself because of technology. I can do it by myself. Would I rather have a Larry Dunn or John Nettlesby? Of course. So, but on the flip side of that, what it does is for people who really don't get it and don't understand, it allows them to make a mediocre sounding record like Sly say and make it acceptable to the public. So it's a tool.
But do I have the right to judge that? From a production standpoint, shouldn't I concentrate on what I do as a producer? For instance, I get different people to play on the record. I still make a record using a lot of old school techniques. I might have you play bass on the record, Derek, and have two or three other guys play bass on that same song, and I might take a part that you did because I think it's the flyest part and match it with somebody else's part and match another part and make my own bass line. So I believe that what I'm able to do now, and again, I'm marrying both parts. I'm marrying the old school. I'm getting that live plasma coming through my tracks. And Derek, you did a song for me on my album, What Do You Want From Me, that was all programmed. It was all you, except for the saxophone. And just that live saxophone against what you did, because what you did was so beautiful. But if I could have never made a production like that.
Yeah, you could have, Jay. Because what you just described is exactly what Steely Dan used to do back in the day. They would audition
I could have never made a production like what Derek did for me. I couldn't have afforded it. But because of technology, I can afford it because he did everything. And all I did on his track was add a saxophone to my vocals. On other tracks, and you're right, I did what Steely Dan and other bands and Compunction and groups like that did. I continue to record that way today. What I'm saying is, shouldn't we be excited about technology? Shouldn't we be looking at the production value that we can get now and say, wow, because, you know, I mean, mediocrity always existed in the music business, and we all got to be honest with that. There were always those novelty records, because that's what we used to call them, that would become hit records and, you know, and sell a gazillion records, and you never hear from the artist again. You know, and that's just the way – That's been the way of the music business. Why do we blame it on technology?
Well, okay, let me jump in here. This is Sly again. All right. I am an arranger, all right? I was taught that even though I went to school for doing strings and everything, Gene Page, who did Barry's strings, taught me how to actually lay strings. Also, I used to use Tower Power when I used to do horn sections. So, yeah, you can have a player, one guy who can play keyboards or whatever, can play that horn line. But what is missing is those little nuances that Tower Power used to do for me.
You can do that if you want to. What I'm saying is, why do you guys look at technology as a negative when, you know, you're right. I agree with you, John.
But
the guy that can't get it.
Okay,
they can't get those nuances.
Okay, but let me go farther with it. So what I'm saying is that, you know, yeah, that's great too, you know, and if you have a great player and everything, I'm not looking at so much as a negative. Now, what I'm looking at the negative, which I was going to go into, is the sound, okay,
mm-hmm.
because that computer is
mm-hmm.
not going to get – that digital sound is not going to be like that analog sound.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I'm going to get that depth. I'm going to get the bottom of that bass player, and I'm going to get the piercing of that horn, and I'm going to get the really sweetness of that strings, because now it becomes a science, because you had to know how to place those microphones in the studio instead of running direct now.
Okay, so, again, Why did you have to stop doing it? Why can't you control? Why did you have to succumb to technology?
Well, the thing is, you had to succumb to technology because that's what, like Derek said, that's what the public or the A&R guys, so-called A&R guys at the labels are looking for. Now,
why are you making records for them? Why don't you make records for yourself? Why don't you do it yourself? That's what I'm saying. Technology says you can forego all of that. Technology says you don't have to buy into none of it.
Right. Hey, Jay.
And you can use whatever parts of me that you want to use.
Right. Hey, Jay, this is D, man. I agree with you. I'm not mad at technology at all. I mean, because I take advantage of it. But what we have to understand, fellas, is this. And this is just my own analysis. I'm gonna pin it to the flow. Now I want you brothers to check me out. This is how I do my numbers. If you were to take the computer, and if you were to take the sequences, and if you were to take technology out of the music today, what percentage of music would you have? And I'm basically talking about, I'm talking about the commercial. Now there's a lot of music out there that doesn't get a chance because of all the garbage that's happening. So the great music, right now, we have to take a back seat to the garbage. But if you was to take all these elements away from music, Jay, right now on radio, what's your percentage of music would you have? Really, how much music would you have? It's going to be a very small percentage. Why? Because of the fact technology is making it simple for kids, for producers who've never picked up an instrument. They're allowing these guys to dominate the music industry today. And that's why that's the problem I have with the whole technology thing. It's nothing wrong with it because it is a convenience. You can record a record with another dude being in L.A. and another cat being in New York. But what I'm saying is it has hurt the feeling of music, man, because music is so sterile now, and it's because of some of the stuff that technology offers.
And let me
jump in
one more time.
Go ahead.
All right, so I just want to piggyback off of what Derek was saying about the feel of it, and I hope these brothers ain't listening, but 1998 or whatever it was, I go in this studio with Jimmy Jam and Terry Lewis,
mm-hmm.
and they're working on the soundtrack to this movie called How Stella Got Her Groove Back. So Terry, Jimmy, Big Jam, they come in with, like, cassettes, right, of songs that they had worked on at home because they didn't know how to use drum machines. So everything that they played for that soundtrack, every idea they had was something that they played at home onto a cassette and then brought to the studio. So Terry had just brought this Joe Mox drum machine back from England, and he didn't know how to lock it up. So I locked it up to my land, put FSK on the tape. I mean, they didn't know Stripes, Simply Down, nothing. But what was fascinating to me was that what it meant to me is that all of those SOS bands, Sherelle Records, Janet Jackson Records, Jimmy Jam literally played from the beginning of the song to the end of the record,
mm-hmm.
top to bottom, right?
Wow.
So every chorus is different because, you never played a chord the same way twice ever, right? Every movement was special and unique and different because he played from top to bottom,
mm-hmm.
right? So now,
mm-hmm.
and again, I hope these brothers ain't listening, we were working on Mariah Carey's Glitter, right? Jimmy was playing this part, and he goes, you know what, Nettlesby, if I just play 8 bars of this, you can loop this, right? And I almost fell out of my damn seat for a second. I was like, yeah, I can. But, like I said, what got to me was the fact that I know now that Weekend Girl was played from the beginning to the end, right? Tell me if you still care. He played from the needle drop to the tag end of the record. And he told me that, when Giorgio Moroder had all those synths that was playing all the Donna Summer stuff, Jimmy Jam thought that Giorgio was playing that stuff. right? So he taught himself how to play all those real staccato stuff. Jimmy was playing that shit by hand, right?
Wow.
From beginning to end. So you hear those records and you're going, man, now this is incredible. But now, give me about 2 bars, 4 bars, I'm a little
there
bit,
it is.
And it's going to sound the same over and over
it is.
And over. And it's going to sound the same and it's going to feel the same from
there
the beginning
is.
Of the record to the end of the record. The first chorus is going to have the same feel as the third chorus.
But
and the same
technology, is that you? Is that the player? How do we blame technology for people getting lazy?
Okay, let me jump in.
The technology leads you, it pulls you into that direction. If you did not have that option, if that tape is rolling and you can't keep going back over them tape heads or you're going to lose that fidelity and you know that every time you rewind and go back and try to punch in and this and that, you're wearing that oxide off that tape, you're going to play that thing so that you can still have some fidelity left when it's time to mix. You're not going to be easy for it.
Well, Dan Brown said the first song I had 3 Radio Shack cassette recorders and a bunch of cassettes.
And let me say this. I'm probably the first person, I'm really going to be bold and say this, I'm probably the first producer in America to ever use a computer. Let me tell you when and where I used it. I used it in 1985 in
no,
Japan.
No, you were not. No. John Barnes. Was probably using a computer before you sometime in the late 70s, early 80s.
Well, I'm talking about as it was called an Atari with the RCX program. I was using it in Tokyo right after I finished doing LaToya over there, and then I produced their big artist, Minako Honda, there. And what you were saying, Nuttlesby, I started Jimmy Jam and Terry was doing the Control album. I was one of the producers on that album even before they came along. Okay, so my point is that
so you produced on the Control album?
Yeah, I was one of the producers on the Control album, absolutely, which is a whole other story, which I'll tell you that one day. But my point is that I started, when I first started using the computer was in Tokyo, and that was in 1985, okay? And again, the program was called RCX program. All right, and what I did, because, you know, it was just coming in over there, I was using, and I'm going to get technical, I had 2 SSL series, 6000 G series locked, 48 tracks with 2 Studers, okay, and then put everything into the RCX and then brought it back out. So my point is that, yeah, I have used the best of both worlds and have been successful, I mean, because the records I did over there were number one. But my point – go ahead. I'm sorry.
The Synclavier, isn't the Synclavier considered a computer?
Mm-hmm. Well,
it's
yes,
a studio.
Yeah,
it's a trickle-down version of Pro Tools and Logic and everything we have, basically.
Absolutely.
That's all it is.
John Barnes – right, I'm just saying. But John Barnes was using a Synclavier in the late 70s.
I mean, if you want to do that, then you go back to Marvin Gaye using an ARP. I mean, if you want to do that, and Stevie Wonder.
I mean, was the ARP able to do what the Synclavier did with multiple tracks playing at the same time? And no,
absolutely not, no.
So really, I mean, I'm just saying that there were people using in America. There were people using the Synclavier, which was really a computer program, because when I was speaking with John Barnes one day, he told me that you had to have 2 engineers with you for the Synclavier, just to plug things up in different places in order to make it work or whatever. I don't know anything about it.
I definitely used the Synclavier, so I know what he's talking about. But I was saying, the computer as we're talking about now.
So would you rather have that? And see, what I want to know, what I really want to know, guys, is, have we just gotten lazy with technology, and so we start to blame technology for the laziness of us as musicians and as creative people, that instead of, like you said, John, you're in a studio with Jimmy Jam, who can play from start to finish. You already seen him do it. Who opts out and says, you know what, man, you can do an 8-bar loop on that, right? And you go, yeah. So is it us or is it technology? Now, that's just another question. Don't worry. That's just me being redundant. I have a question. Okay. I'm going to take questions from anybody who wants to call in, 347-205-9366, 347-205-9366. Lynn Tolliver, let me ask you a question. Is Lynn there? Can you hear me, Lynn? Lynn has his stuff on mute, you guys.
Of course I do.
Lynn, so you, when did you first start producing records? Because you were in radio, what made you decide, you know, I'm going to get into this radio, to this music production thing?
Was to be honest with you, Jay, I picked up a guitar when I was 17, and I started playing.
I remember.
You know, but what happened was I got into radio, and I said, hey, screw this guitar junk, because I couldn't play anyway. And I got the kind of response I did in radio in 1968. But all the time I would try to play records, and this is what I did. I would use, my father bought me a tape recorder, a reel-to-reel. You guys, maybe John remembers that. You younger
guys remember
may
it.
Not.
You know, I remember it in your basement. I remember it in your basement. Absolutely.
Do you guys remember this? Like if the tape scooted up around the rim and chewed the tape up, and then now that was ruined.
It was gone.
Right.
Yeah, it was all ruined. So what I would do was I would take that tape recorder and then had another tape recorder, and it was like sound on sound. You know, I did that when I was like 17. I had a song called I'll Be Blue, and I can't sing. You know, I don't have any soul, so I sound white when I sing. And that's what I would do. And I would play it to people and say, hey, man, that ain't nothing. So my radio career took off, and I didn't do anything really constructive until 1982. I did I Need a Freak by Sexual Harassment. And I really didn't know what I was. I mean, I didn't know what I was doing. I was experimenting, and I told them what I wanted. And you know, I had there was the McCants brothers, Sam and Chris. They were the guys who played the instruments on the record. And I told them what I wanted. And I remember the engineer laughing and saying, "Hey, man, you might as well have just farted on the record." And you know.
Now, do you think? Now, do you think today, and you guys know I Need a Freak, right?
Doom, doom, doom.
Yeah.
Doom, doom, doom. Doom, doom, doom. Doom, doom, doom. I Need a Freak. Doom, 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 doom. You guys know that song, right? You guys are familiar with it, I'm sure.
And so, Lynn Tolliver writes this song, and the song he writes it, and then Black Eyed Peas does a remake of it, and you know, and he makes more money. But that was the beginning of the computer age and technology. And here's a song that was made then using the crude part of technology, because that's when drum machines and stuff were just starting to come out and be part of records, because up until that point, you know, it's live drummers.
And it was a primitive. It was a primitive drum machine.
But here's a record now that was made with do you think technology of the day that you know, that was a little more advanced, and I'm sure record came out, people were saying a lot of what we're saying right now, but that record is now in the classic hip-hop. Are we being a little too judgmental, guys?
Okay, Jay, so let me drop something real quick. Nettlesby again. I remember maybe 20, 30 years ago, I was at a studio in Rockford, and this white guy came, this is not a racist, but this white boy came in there, and he had a drum machine, and he said, you know, if we delay this snare like 20 milliseconds, we'll get that Negro feel, right? It'll have that soulful feel. And I looked at him and I laughed. I said, you know what, man? He said, my boss, you will never be able to replace a black drummer with a machine. It ain't going to happen. You're going to always have to have, because we are African. See, our ancestors communicated with drums. They're talking drums, right? It was, you know, that was how one village would communicate to another or to the members of the village. I go to a drum off nowadays, there are no black drummers. Latinos, white guys, ain't nobody black playing drums. We all got drum machines, right? I mean, you think about congas and cuecas, the skin on skin. There are
some our youth today that probably have never heard an actual real drum. They hear samples of samples of samples, sampled from a record, sampled from it, but the actual sound of a stick hitting some skin or a skin, flesh on flesh, you know, the conga where you do that little woo thing. We don't know what real drums sound like, and we're African. We're of African descent. That is the danger of technology. I bet if that white guy could see me, could find me today, he'd laugh in my face. Be, ah, ah, ah.
I'd like to say something on behalf of Narda Michael Walden. I met him at a convention once, and he told me that when the drum started, you know, the electronic drum started to perfect themselves, he recorded himself playing the drums and put them on chips so that his drum sound that he made himself personally would be in his drum sessions.
Yeah, that was the Lynn drum. And also, too, like John Nettlesby, him and I being the seniors here, and I'm going to use that word only once other than Oliver, is that, I mean, John and I, when we sit down, we can say if that drummer is playing with a felt mallet or whether he's playing with a woolen mallet. Is that a Tama set? Is that a Pearl set? Is that a Slingerson set? Because it was a science. You knew what set to bring in according to what song you were doing. And plus, the drums, when you were in the studio, the drum set was mic'd to that room because the room was scoped out to get that sound. Okay, when they asked me to do a recording clinic over here, and over here at Musicians Institute, and when I walked in, because it was me and John Barnes, they had two winners. One was from England and one from Scotland. So John took one and I took the other. I walked in, and the engineer, so-called engineer, had the drums mic'd all crazy. And so I said, when you going to mic the drums? He said, they're already mic'd. So I had to show him how to mic. And then I asked him, I said, what key is the song in? He said, what do you mean? This is the drums. Yeah, right. You turn the drums into the key of the song. See, these are things that John Nettlesby and I basically forgot about.
Hey, technology isn't doing that.
Hey,
but
Jay,
that's my point.
Let me say something, man. This DOA, let's bring it back home to the technology thing, because, Jay, you proposed a great question about technology making people lazy, making people not want to create, and I want to bring it back. I want to get back in that lane, because this is real serious stuff that people really definitely need to know. I love technology, Jay. I'm not mad at technology. Technology is great. And I think technology is convenient, and it helps out a lot of producers. See, Jay, if it wasn't for technology, I couldn't send you a beautiful song like, you know, What Have You Done For Me? You know, I mean, What Do You Want From Me? I couldn't send you that song the way I sent it to you. But because of the type of producer that I am, the type of producer that everybody on this phone is, you know, we all play. So the way we use computers is going to be different than the way a 16-year-old, 17-year-old, and I'm not knocking them. That's what they do, because they don't. That's all they know, Jay. And it goes back to when we grew up playing music in school. They took all the music out of the school programs, so there's no season. There's no season in this music that we're hearing now, because the music that we're hearing is coming from people who don't have to know how to play due to technology. That's the flip side of it. But what I do, I'll sit down to my computer, to Logic, and I'll play, John, I'll play the bass line from top to bottom. Or I might play 24 bars and loop 24 bars to make it sound like and seem like I played the whole bass line. Or I'll play the string arrangement. I'll play everything. I'll play. That's because that's the gift. That's my gift. But on the other side of that, Jay, a lot of people right now, you don't need that. You don't need that gift anymore. And back in the day, you had to have, there was no other way to do it. So that's why when people say, you know, why does music, older people, I don't listen to the radio. Radio sucks. Well, that's you. But there's a lot of 12, 13-year-old kids that's listening to this music and think it's hot. To them, it's hot. Why? Because they can relate to it. Because you, and it's not musical no more. Music is sterile. Why? Because of the advances of technology. Technology allows you to go buy Fruity Loops. Technology allows you to go sample a Sly Slick and Wicked record and to sample it and manipulate it. And, man, kids are great at that stuff. So instead of them getting into what the art of music really is, they get into the art and the design of what technology. Oh, if I push this button, you mean I can do this? And so that's what producers and kids are doing. Dude, I ain't got no problem with it. I love technology. I thank God for technology because we're in the change. But it has changed, man, the way we listen to music, the music that we buy, and the way that the music that's influencing the other generation. You know, we got to keep in mind everybody on this phone is over 40. So if you got somebody that's 16, 17, they're going to disagree with everything we're talking about. Why? Because they don't understand it.
All right, you guys, it's a great topic. It's a great conversation. If anybody wants to say anything, the number is 347-205-9366. We're going to come back. We're going to play. I'm going to play. This is a song that I did with Derek. This is called What Do You Want From Me? We're going to come back. And you guys, and we're going to find out how much of this Derek actually played and how much of it did he sample. I mean, not sample, but, you know, but sequence. All right. You got it, Lynn? J. King, What Do You Want From Me? From the Open Book CD.
And I'm flawed, can't you see? This is the best I can be till I learn the rest of me. I'm just a simple man trying to understand how love is supposed to be. As you walk away from me, what do you want from me? You're getting too hard to please. If we're gonna really make it,
Yeah, Jay King, what do you want from me? All instruments played by Derek Allen, with the exception of the saxophone. Now, so John Nettlesby, from a, okay, hold on. I see Lynn has everybody on mute. Open up everybody's line, Lynn. I'm going to get everybody's lines open. While everybody's lines get opened up, I'm going to say this, you guys. If not for technology.
They're open. They've been open. You must be seeing something different.
I must be. I'm on my iPad. You know what I did, Lynn?
What?
I came on the show on my iPad just to see if it works. So as you can see, just to see what kind of control I could have. I don't know nothing. I don't know nothing. This is what happens when you overbook yourself. But if it ain't the technology, Lynn, we don't get to do what we're doing right now. And I think with production, you know, that's a very rich sounding production. And you know how many times Derek and I were in the studio for that production?
Once.
Never. I was never in the studio with him. He literally sat in a car with me, listened to what I was doing, and said, "I'm gonna bring you something." Sent it to me over an email, then sent me a file. I took the file, brought in Kyle Bennett. Kyle Bennett came in a session. In 20-25 minutes, not even that long. I think the whole session was 30 minutes, and he played on 4 songs. I could have never done that without technology. Back in the day, because you got to strike the tape, you got to make sure that the tracks are aligned, that everything is in line. Before, you know, it's at +3, +4, +6, wherever you're doing that. There's a whole rigmarole that you had to do, and technology just wiped all that stuff away. I literally went from one song to the next song to the next song to the next song, and then 30 minutes or less, Cal Bennett had played on every song that I want him to play on. And one of them was Derek's song on What Do You Want From Me. So, Derek,
let me jump in here, because what I'm hearing, what I hear on that song, this is John Sly, what I hear on there is all the years before this came along,
exactly.
I hear the separation.
Yeah, absolutely.
I hear separations. I hear how he used his reverb for the strings. I hear how he treated your vocals, everything. So basically he's using, like he said earlier, he's using the knowledge that he gained before this came along. And then applied it to the technology. Yeah, it made it easier, but he still had to have that basic school there in order
right.
for even to make it sound like that.
Right.
Which leads me back to, isn't it great that technology exists for somebody like a Derek Allen? Because, and again, this is where technology becomes a friend to guys like us and becomes, you know, And we get to see the flaws of some of these young cats, and they get to learn. They're just learning at another level. They're just learning while participating in the music business. And to me, what it does is it gives them the running start that we didn't have. So these guys are a little more acclimated from a business standpoint. They're a little more acclimated. You know, maybe not now because they're still babies, but it gives them the opportunity if they have their minds open. To grow, because I believe that there's so much mediocre music out there that it doesn't do anything. It doesn't go anywhere. Mm-hmm. And that's why you got somebody like a Karen White who can put out a record right now mm-hmm. and be effective and efficient, and people say, "Oh, my God, now here's real talent." Mm-hmm. Because the real talent from the mediocre talent is really separated.
Exactly. Exactly. And, John... Sly, you hit it right on the nose. Jay, I'm all for technology. You right, man. I thank God for technology. I thank God that instead of being limited to 24 tracks, I can do 300 tracks. You know, that's a wonderful thing. It's an awesome thing. You know, it's just kind of twofold. And Jay, you just made a great point about the real players versus the mediocre players. And here's the deal, man. The mediocre players, they winning. Just look at the chart. Look at Billboard. They winning when it comes down to commercialized, making money, hit records from a commercial standpoint. Now, I'm not talking about, you know, a lot of the independent underground musicians that are out there that are doing great music, man.
but it makes it because of these mediocre players, man, that have never lifted their hand up to play an instrument. You know, we have to compete with that now. So I say instead of competing with it, don't compete with it because you won't win. I say you join it. You accept it for what it is, and it is what it is. Yeah, I'm a producer, man. You know, I worked with Kanye West last year. You know, I worked with, you know, DJ Quick last year. You know, I turned around and worked with, you know, Smokey Norful. I did the whole, me and Wayman did the whole funk record. Wayman's last album was with the funk record, the Funky Planetarians, his last project before he passed. Now, I worked with Wayman on his jazz records, but the funk record was the last record that he did. On that record, we got George Clinton on the record, we got Ollie Woodson on the record, and we got George Duke on the record. Jay, you know the story. We did that whole record primarily through the internet, through technology, because Wayman was in the hospital and going through chemo, going through his treatments. So Wayman was in the hospital recording stuff, and we was file sharing the project until we got the record done. Then he passed. Then it was up to me to finish the record. Well, Ollie Woodson sung on the record. I didn't see Ollie. Ollie cut the records from his studio in L.A., sent me the files back. 3 months later, Ollie passed. You know, George Duke, same way. So, and you listen to that record right now, that record sounds like everybody was in the same room playing all together, like Nettlesby said. Why? Because we all got the gift, man, to be able to get on a computer and manipulate it our way. We don't have to find Fruity Loops. I don't have to call a bass player. I don't even have to call a guitar player. Hell, I don't even got to call a piano player because I understand how it's laid. I could do it myself. But when you listen to that record, and if anybody ain't got it, check out Wayman Tisdale, the funk record. It's an awesome project. It's his last piece of work that he and I did. And it's an awesome record. And I'm telling you, sonically, we try to capture the analog feel, the whole deal. And because of technology, it's a beautiful thing, man. But it's two sides to that whole – it's two sides to it. I, you know, I'm in love with it all. I love it all. I don't have a problem with it.
Okay. All right, you guys. Did you want to say something, John?
Well, I'm saying I was agreeing with everything that Derek said, and I was going to say I was faced with that problem. The project hasn't been released yet, but I just did a thing for Peace, which I had Al Jarreau, Take Six, Brian McKnight, George Clinton, and Taylor Dane, Layla Hathaway. And my point is we did it over Jim Henson's the studios, and even though, you know, they got the SSL there, yeah, I had to use both technologies. Okay, and like I said, I'm not mad at the technology. I'm mad at the way it's being used and the knowledge that's being lost from John, you know, people like, you know, John and Derek and I and yourself, that we, you know, how the knowledge that we accumulated, we're trying to pass it on, but they're not listening.
I don't know if they're not, you know, let's get to that then. So, you know, there's a lot of young guys, there's a lot of young people that listen to this show. Is it that they're not listening, or is it that we're talking at them versus talking to them?
Well, I try to talk to them. I tell them that recording is a science, okay? Just like John, like Derek said, and John, yeah, it's great, the technology, but you have to know the sciences. You got to know, like, when you're mixing, phasing. Just like, for example, you go in the studio now with a young cat, and let's say you do something, whatever he does, whatever, and when you finish the session, he says, I just mastered it. You did what? Do you understand what mastering? Okay, you just because you got the plug in there, but do you understand what it takes to master your final thing to get it done? And they'll sit up there and look at, well, no, I got the tool. Well, go to Bernie Grundman and find out what mastering is. Yeah, you got the plug in.
But do I have to go to Bernie Grundman now to master? Can I master? I mean, am I not capable of mastering? I mean, technology has changed in every other area. Why hasn't it changed there?
You're right, Jay. Here's the point:
what you're missing is that know the knowledge of mastering.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Here's the point, Jay. It's like I was telling you the other week about Dave Pensado's show. Where Dave Pensado is getting on the show and he gives you all his mixed secrets and he gets all the Swedeen and everybody else and they're telling you all their tricks. But Dave has always maintained this. He says, now, I can teach you how to make a snare crack. I can teach you how to make a bass fat. I can teach you how to make a vocal sound great.
What I cannot teach you is when the vocal sounds good, when that snare is cracking, when that bass is sitting in the right space. So it's not about, yeah, you have the tools to master a record, but do you have the understanding?
Mm-hmm.
Do you know that these are multiple frequencies, and then you can apply a limiter across multiple frequency bands? Do you know when to use those frequencies, what crossover points to cross over at? Do you know it's not as simple as just turn up and travel under the bass. You now have to limit a range of frequencies, and you have to know where the crossover points are for radio, for people's cars, for this, for that. It's not just trial and error. There's a science to why these records sound louder and better than your record, and they may not even be louder than your record in terms of average, or is it peak? You know, when you're looking at limiting, is it peak limiting or is it average limiting? Average sounds louder than peaks, even though your peaks might be hotter than the next record. If you don't understand those concepts, then you're just mastering. You're just taking a stab in the dark. You know what I mean? So, yeah, you got all the ingredients. You go in the kitchen, you got paprika, you got cloves, you got ginger, and you got cinnamon. If you don't know when to use those ingredients, then you'll just throw it all in a pot and it'll come out tasting like, you know what I mean? You have to know what you're doing, and that comes
Tasting like a hotmess.com.
There it is.
That's what happens when you listen to reality TV. 347-205-9366, 347-205-9366, for anybody who wants to call in. Lynn, do we have any other callers? I believe Robert Redwine might have just called in. Robert, we got some heavy hitters on the phone. So.
Jay, I've been listening, and, you know, I want to add a few things. I apologize. I came in late from a meeting that went longer than I thought.
Robert, stop right now. You trust me, you were not missed. It was not. Nothing happened. Nobody
well,
said,
Jay,
oh, my God.
I wanted to add a couple things. First, that DOA record that he did on Wayman Tisdale, he really, really captured the funk essence. And I wish George would call him so he can really bring George back.
Appreciate it.
And I heard that it's funky from beginning to end. I'm a funky
it
here,
is.
Man. And the production, the engineering, the mastering,
you,
the vocals, the arrangement, you really brought it back. You really captured that whole essence.
Thank you.
You're welcome, DOA. And last but not least, there's three kind of producers in my opinion. There's a project producer. He's like a Puff Daddy. He's like a Quincy Jones who hires out writers. He hires, he knows how to work with the engineer. There's a live field producer, somebody like a Fred Durst who brings bring the noise and that riot rock hip-hop sound that knows how to make it sound live. And then there's the hands-on guys like Rodney Jerkins. Well, DOA, you probably encompass all of it, and you're one of the rare cats. So I think, you know, you really need to understand the various types of producers there are if you're going to be a producer.
That's a good point, Jay.
And see, a producer, again, from you know, John and my era were, you know, I looked up to Tom Bell, okay?
Right.
And, you know, just to name some of the cats that he produced was, you know, Stylistics, you know, Delphonics, Bert Digato, who did The Main Ingredient in Us, you know, Van McCoy, who basically, you know, a producer was a guy that walked in, you know, not only did he work with an engineer, he actually wrote the music. He was an arranger like myself, and he from A to Z, okay? And so that, again, just like if I had Derek, if I was going to bring Derek in to do a track, you know, a live track, he's going to bring his position bass, he's going to bring his jazz bass, because he says, okay, what sound do you need, what do you need, and he's going to pick up the bass according to him, not sit up there and put a patch in. And like he said, and when he plays, you know, everything is going to be a little bit subtleties and difference, and that's what the technology when looping or when sampling a bass player, you know, just for example, is going to differ. Yeah, that's where we lose it in the technology. But, yeah, it's going to be faster and everything else. I'm not against that. What I'm against, just like John says, this is a science. And what I think that the young producers and artists are now missing is the science, you know, phasing. When you mix, you know, it's saying, you know, this is going to cancel out. When do you use a gate? Like John said, when are you going to use a limiter? You know, I mean, there's all types of things that go into a production producing a final product.
Okay, Lynn, open up 443-722.
Hello?
Is it open, Lynn?
Am I on? This is Bilal.
Yes. Yes, you're on. How you doing, Bilal?
Okay, how y'all doing?
Bilal,
loving the conversation.
I know where you're calling from.
Oh,
you know
Bilal, from Baltimore. Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay. Carry on.
Can y'all hear me?
Very well.
Okay, cool. All right, so all due respect to all the guests, all the veterans that are on the phone. Here's my comment. I come from the hip-hop generation where when I first got introduced to music, the making of music, the production of music, I was taught by playing records, finding certain parts of the song, and sampling it. That was the only introduction, the only knowledge I had of music. So being saying that and talking about the evolution of technology and production of music, there's a website, a YouTube video of a Bakwa, it's called the Bakwa women, doing water drumming, which is they're playing water, playing percussion, making sound with water. For y'all generation, using instruments, would that be considered an evolution of technology? And how do you pay homage to those instruments or music being played in other forms? And without instruments, and is that respected, and do you pay homage to the whole evolution of music production and sound? That's my comment.
I gotta say, anything that's musical, and anybody that's creative, and I don't care if it's a DJ spinning on some turntables, or a guy programming some drums, or a guy sequencing a keyboard and, you know, and string sounds. If it's emotional and I feel it, I'm going to respect it. If a guy is playing a live instrument and he sounds like Boo Boo on the stick, there's no respect in it, not because it's a live instrument, but because it's nothing real. There's no emotion there. So if I hear somebody that's doing something that's got the emotion in the feel, because there's some great records that I heard. You know, I remember hearing I Remember by Keisha Cole. And the record moved me. I remember when I heard Don't Change by Music Soul Child. And that record moved me. I'm talking about move my soul. So I think, you know, and I think sometimes as musicians, and you guys, you know, chime in what you think. I think as musicians sometimes we get a little too quirky about it. You know, we start listening to it too technically. I listen to music. I love music. So I wake up every morning listening to music, all sorts of music, according to what my mood is. Do you think sometimes we can get a little too judgmental about music or a little too technical about it?
I don't, and I'm going to say this. The first time that I ever got really knocked down by a production was in Lynn Tolliver's basement. I don't know if you remember this, Lynn. You had the record A Quarter to Three by Gary U.S. Bonds. Are you still there, Lynn?
Okay, Lynn, we're going to the long story, John.
Okay, I'm not.
Yes,
I'm
still here.
Okay.
Yeah,
I'm just saying. I went over his house, and he played me A Quarter to Three by Gary U.S. Bonds. And I was so knocked out by that, because not because of singing, but the production where the echoes and the, you know, the reverbs were used on that song. That's what moved me, and that's what I'm saying. And that probably was no more than one or two tracks. You see, and again, and we're talking about the science of production. Motown, most of your Motown records were either four or eight tracks. Some of the greatest hits that were ever on this planet were only four and eight tracks.
Some of those guys said, the way y'all making records with these 16 and 24 tracks, the way a record was made is with four tracks. You only need four tracks to make a real record. Y'all wasting all that space making noise. And you guys know it. Mm-hmm. Are we getting too technical, guys? Are we getting too technical about it? Are we listening from some old ears? You know, because, you know, jazz musicians said that soul music was an abomination of music. So are we getting to the point that we start sounding like those old fools?
No.
I'm just asking
no, Jay. The reason why I want to answer, chime in on that, look what Marvin Gaye did to the Motown sound with his innovation with overdubbing and all that kind of stuff. He
exactly.
He
listen to the question, Robert.
Okay.
Because you're making my point. Because prior to Marvin doing that, nobody was doing that. And a lot of those guys thought that was advanced technology and it wasn't good for music. So you're making my point. What I'm asking you guys is, are we getting, and Robert, because you weren't here at the beginning, you can't even answer this question because you just coming in and chiming in. So you need to catch up. So I'm asking everybody else. I'm asking the other guys. Are we getting too technical in our thinking? Are we looking at music? Who's on a headset? You got to mute somebody, Lynn, because it echoes back.
Jay, to this Nettlesby, to speak to your question, and I from a technical standpoint, I'm gonna tell you, I find probably that this technology leads us in other directions as well. Like back in the day, we played. We didn't know mm-hmm. if the bass was in the head of the kick or behind the kick or whatever. It just had a certain feel to it. Now. Mm-hmm. We look in Pro Tools and we see at bar 9 that bass is a little bit behind the kick or a little bit ahead of the kick, and then we'll go technically and move it to where it lands on the kick. So we're altering the feel. We're more technical now because we look at music as a producer.
That's what I'm saying. Are we getting too technical? Are we?
I think that's the double-edged sword. We're getting lazier, and we're getting far more technical than we were when we were just feeling. Like I said before, it was the feel. Hey, you would say, yo, dog, lay back a little bit, man. Just lay back. Don't. You're kind of rushing a little bit. Now, we don't care as much because we know, hey, man, I can fix that. So we're not as stringent about the vibe and the feel as we used to be because it was everything before. Now, we can fix it.
Let me tell you guys something. I did a song with Eric McTwain. Eric McTwain sent me a track for Club Nouveau. I added on top of his track. When you strip the track, there's two or three bass lines, and the drums kind of drag. And everybody who listens to the song says, "Man, I don't know. You might want to change this because the drums are just a little behind. They're just not. It's not where it's supposed to be." And that bass, I mean, it's cool, but when you take this bass out of it, then match right. So you got to have all those basses on there, and that don't make any sense. And I said, I never heard music make sense. I just heard music feel good. I just heard music saying something.
Mm-hmm.
If you listen to a lot of my records, if you listen to Lean On Me or Why You Treat Me So Bad, didn't have a bass line. That don't make no sense. So, you know, it only makes sense when it starts making sense to you. So, you know, I think, you know, in all this technology, you know, we're so busy saying what's wrong. Don't you guys think that maybe we ain't looking at what's right? It's just a question. I'm just asking a question so you guys can understand.
Can I say something, Jay? This big swan.
Mm-hmm.
You know, in my background with music, being, you know, kind of like self-taught, just, you know, saying, hey, I'm going to do this, you know, and being around a lot of accomplished musicians, when they would listen to my music, they would always talk about me really, really bad. I mean, this ain't right. But then I would listen to their stuff, and because they were so... They knew how the music was supposed to be. They knew, you know, what was supposed to go where, when, and how. When I listened to their music, it didn't move me. It didn't do anything for me. And It was when I just said, forget it, and I'm just going to do what I do and do it the way I do it, is when I started really feeling the music and people started listening to what I was doing. I'll tell you, I can't think of the name of the song, but it's the Whispers Christmas song. What's that? These are a few of my favorite things or whatever. Are you familiar with that song?
Yeah, I am.
Yes.
I don't know who mixed that song, but the first time I heard that song, it brought tears to my eyes just listening to the mix. So, like the song that you were talking about, that for the Club Nevo, before I did that song, I listened to that Whisper song, and I said, you know what, I want a mix like that, and I want my music to be like that. I want that feel, and that's where that came from, you know. So the point that I'm trying to get is I believe in technology, because if it wasn't for technology, I wouldn't be able to do the type of music that I'm doing today the way that I do it, because I'm not a bass player. I'm not a keyboard player, even though I play all my instruments. I play everything. I don't sample nothing. I play everything. But technology has allowed me to be able to kick back and listen to what I did in by sequencing it a 4 or 8 bar or 16 bar loop, and then listening to it and analyze what I did wrong and correct it. So I really love technology. I love it. You know, I love it.
But Big Swain just said something to me that was really profound. He said that when he goes to, let's say, our era of music, it didn't do anything for him.
No, I'm not saying
that's not what he said.
I misunderstood you.
I do rumors right now.
Hey, Swain, I do want to ask you a question, though. Why don't you sample? This is DOA asking you, why don't you sample?
Because there's enough sounds out there to where you shouldn't really have to sample anything. You should do it yourself. Matter of fact, I'll play something, and, you know, I just do my own thing. I'm doing old school R&B, so there's no need for me to sample anything.
Okay. Do you have a problem with – what do you think about producers who do sample?
Oh, cool. Okay. I mean, it takes skill to do whatever you do.
Mm-hmm.
You got to take whatever you do to get where you got to go. And if you go sample, damn it, be the best sampling fool on earth. That's my motto, if that's what you're going to do.
I like when you said
it just trips me out some being around some of the people, especially since I've moved here to Ohio, Columbus. I'm in Columbus now instead of Oakland. And it was a lot of haters in Oakland. But let me tell you, I asked the keyboard player, because I saw him. He played really nice. And I asked him, I said, man, do you get lessons? And he looked me straight in the face and said, no. I was like, oh, my God.
I want to do something right now, you guys. I want to play something from Eric McSwain. This is from Eric McSwain production right here. I think it's going to work for me.
want to let you guys hear a little bit. Okay, so Eric, when you listen to that, are you looking at yourself as a producer or as somebody that's creating a rhythm that people can put a production on top of?
I consider myself as someone creating rhythm to, you know, put something on top of. It's funny you play that particular beat right there, because I did that a long time ago, and my mixing have improved at least 90% from the time I did.
Well, I played that one because every track I have on here just say Eric McSwain, and it was the shortest one.
Oh.
And then I think I'm gonna stop them anyway. Derek. So if a guy came to you with something like that, what are you thinking? I mean, obviously he sequenced the whole thing. You can hear it. You can hear it. But you know, that's a loop and all that stuff. That is looping.
Mm-hmm.
Is it making you feel a certain way? Do you hear something in there?
Well, basically, it's you know, it sounds like a loop. I would get with the artist and say, what's your vision with this? And then I would try to help him create the vision. If it's for me to replay it, to do it live, or continue, you know, the sample just to make it thicker, just to thicken up the production, you know, mm-hmm. sequencing the whole thing because it seems like everything is kind of looped, and making that loop, you know, sonically hit a certain way or changing the sounds out or whatever. That would be my job as the producer, to find out what his vision is with the track. But it's a fun track, so I like it.
Okay, so this guy, he's just a writer. He's like, hey, Derek Allen, I know, man, I like you. I like what you do, man. Here's some tracks, you know. Uh-huh. And this guy, and he sends them to you, and and you send it down. He sends you the waves, or he sends
right.
it over to you. Now you got the – so is this the kind of thing you work with?
I do, and I have. You know, I definitely do, and I have. And sometimes I'll listen to something, and if it hit me a certain way, I'll suggest it to the artist or to the writer, to the person who's doing the track or whatever, and I'll suggest it, you know, and then I'll put my little two cent in and try to give it my vision and just try to mission both together, but not take away from what he has, you know what I'm saying? But then there's some things, Jay, that you just got to strip down and start from the ground, you know. It's just, there's just no hope, you know, and I've done that too, you know. So it just depends on, you know, the material and what artists are trying to go with their music. You know, my job as a producer is to help you birth what you got inside, not for me just to take it and make it my way. It's not for me to do that. It's for me to get an understanding what it is you want and your vision. And my job is to help you create that vision.
But if I'm a guy that's just doing tracks and I'm sending it to you, you'll manipulate it any way you want to make it for somebody, or make it what you hear, the vision, right?
I would have to, because if this guy's kind of like saying, hey, I just did this, I don't know, I don't have a clue, it's your world, then it's my world, then I'll just do my thing. And hopefully at the end of the day, he or she likes it, you know?
Nettlesby, same question to you.
What was the question again?
Did you have $100 I can borrow to next week?
what was the question again?
Do you have $100 that I can borrow to next week?
Oh, absolutely, Jay. Come on, man.
Oh, right on. Okay, I'll get it in the morning. But another question I had was, did you hear you heard the music that was playing, right?
Right.
Okay, so this guy sent you this music. When you listen to the music, are you, you know, first of all, did you like what you hear? When you hear it, are you hearing something that the guy obviously, you know, played it, you know, looped it, and now he's got a groove going. Is it something that's attractive to you, or you listen to it and say, I can do something with this? And if so, what happens from that point?
Well, I mean, you know, from that point, it's just a matter of who do we envision this for, this artist or that artist? Are we just trying to write a song just to be writing a song?
No, a guy just sending you some music. This guy sends you this music. You just heard this piece right now.
Right.
What's happening? Do you like it?
I mean,
You feeling me? You feel me?
Yeah.
Okay, so what can I do with this, man? I got this piece of music right here. You know, I know who you are. You know, you're a great producer and everything, man. Do you like my groove? Can you do something with it?
Absolutely. I mean, it just depends on how much leeway and how much...
I'm sending you the files over to you, man.
Right.
I'm sending these files over to you.
Right.
Can I?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Once, you know, it just depends on how, and you know, music is subjective from day to day, like I learned from Michael Jackson. So depending on what day I might say, man, this is banging. On another day, I might say, you know what, let me just change up all these sounds and keep your basic idea and switch. It just depends, man. It's subjective.
John, you heard it. What you think? I'm Sly.
Well, I you know, I like his skeleton. I would call it a skeleton or something. And my next question to him: what do you see? What do you want to do with this? I said, I like your skeleton. So, you know,
right.
What do you want to do?
Now, you know, so he sent it over to you. He sent you, and you send it out. He said, hey, John, do what you want to do. You Sly.
All right. So now I'm thinking two ways. I'm thinking vocally from Sly Slick and Wicked standpoint, but also I'm thinking from, you know, me as a composer, you know, an arranger. You know, I said, you know, I might want to do something with Derek, you know, in a Wayman Tisdale style or whatever. So now I got to put an artist or a genre in vision for me to move it if you're going to give me full control. Or just like Derek said, I might just strip the whole thing down and just start and maybe keep just the beat and go and build from there.
You see how technology works, y'all? See, we get so caught up in the technology, we're just talking about it because we're talking about the technology of all this. I'm just sending this track out to as many people as I can. That's something that we could never do in our day. And we know it. And John, you know better than I do. When we were doing remixes to our songs, we'd have to make slaves.
Yeah, absolutely.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Slave y'all with a copy of your track, the same thing that you had tracked on, the same exact thing, except this was a slave. In other words, this is one that you could send out to somebody and they could play with. The original was there. It was left intact.
And I tell them the meaning of the other meaning of slave. Do you remember that?
John, you're a little older than me. I'm 50.
Okay,
you,
and
you,
John Sebastian,
you're 60.
Okay, is that if you were going to go 48 track, you would use that slave to lock that other
but
right.
Then that's when you're going 40. Yeah, but I'm.
But
talking,
that's what I'm saying.
That's
when you talk about technology, because then, like
yeah.
I said, we talked from two track to four track, the eight track to 16 to 24, and now you want to go to 48. You would bring that other master that you used it, that first
slave, that's right,
and use it as a slave to help lock that
or,
other track.
Sometimes you had eight tracks and it wasn't a slave. It was literally a 48 track recording, and you made the slave of that 48 track recording because it was a second recording.
Well, absolutely.
And you just made copies of the. Let's get AJ on right now real quick because I hope AJ ain't calling in making jokes because he, you know, this guy got 16 jobs. He's a comedian, he's a record executive, produce records, he writes songs, he beat people up, that beat people up. It's a whole thing. I'm going to see who he is today. Hey, AJ.
Hey, what's up, Jay, man? How's it going, man?
How you doing?
I just got one thing to say. We were talking about the whole technology thing, and I was talking about this with DOA. My son is a producer, and he stepped to me in the studio one day. He said, Dad, you can't produce. I cannot produce you. And I told him, I said, look, man, let me tell you something. I can play all the instruments. He said, but you can't program an MP. But I told him, what if we run out of electricity? What if we run out of electricity? What are you going to do? And what I told him, I said, look, what y'all do is take a box, put it in the middle of a room, duct tape it, put a bunch of pots and pans, spoons, and broken glasses in there, duct tape it up, go in the studio, and just shake it to a rhythm. That's what the music sounds like today. But if we go out of electricity, you can take an acoustic guitar, bass, and drums, and still do a concert. So It's great to know the technology, because I can program some stuff in there too, but when it comes down to producing, it's like knowing a producer like DOA. DOA has the confidence, like he can go in with an acoustic guitar and play something live and just go with it. But a lot of these producers today, if the electricity go out, they can't play a song on a piano. So just putting that in the mix and just to throw it in, the greatest song ever produced was Cowboys and Girls by the Intruders.
Cowboys and Girls, I remember.
No,
when
I was
we
saying,
used to
no.
say, shoot him up.
For me, the greatest one to produce was How Can I Let You Get Away by the Spinners. Listen to that mix.
Oh, man.
Woo.
Listen to that mix. Tom Bell. Absolutely. That was, to me, one of the closest to a perfect mix as you could ever get.
I'm going to tell you something. One of the greatest records ever made is Blame It on the Alcohol. I'm guilty.
Oh, come on, Jay.
You was drinking some alcohol and you thought of exit.
Come on, Jay.
I'm just fooling with y'all. 347-205-9366. This is Sister Sister by Karen White, y'all, from the Carpe Diem album.
Come on and wake up. Nobody tripping about what you got on. See, I should have your back, hey, you should have mine. We've been fighting for too long.
Sister Sister from the Carpe Diem album is going to be out sometime this spring, March, April. But you guys will be able to see Karen White live March 1st through the 3rd at the Razz Room in San Francisco. RRAZZ. www.razzroom.com. Don't miss it. It's going to be a great show. People coming forward. That's from Virginia to see Karen White. That's when you know you got fans. So, call up producers. You guys don't stumble over each other, but, you know, you guys can ask, I mean, answer one at a time. Reverend Red Wine, I'll let you start it off. Are you discouraged by what you see happening in the future with production, or are you encouraged? Do you think that technology is showing some encouraging signs for future productions, or are you thinking that's going to be more of the same and it's going to be drum and drab?
Well, on the positive note, I mean, like if you were going to do a dance or a house record, you can time compress 98 BPMs and turn it into 102 without changing the key. So that's an encouraging sign. But on the negative side, musicianship, singing, a song all the way through, doing the backgrounds all the way through without sampling, pointing and clicking and changing a bass to be on the one, that kind of stuff makes musicians cheat, so they lose their craft.
Anybody else you got? Derek?
Let me just say, I really, you know, appreciate this show, and it was a great topic. But I'm in love with technology. Don't get me wrong. I love it. But there is twofold that we all have to understand that, you know, it's a beautiful thing when we use it right, but it's also a beautiful thing when people who use it and abuse it for their own way and, you know, the music, and it changes and takes the beauty out of the music. That's and as long as, you know, it's going to continue to change, Jay. I mean, technology is going to go and it's going to get bigger and bigger. 10 years from now, we're going to be at another level. So I say I'm going to be one of those dudes to go with it, you know, and use it the way I use it. Some other cats are going to use it the way they use it. But when people say music is sterile and music, what's happening to music, you know, a lot of it has to do with producers not knowing how to play and releasing records and them being number one records. It is changing music.
I like that track, Jay. Go ahead, Lex.
Yeah. I think that production and technology is like a gun. Whoever uses it determines how it's used. Mm. And getting back to, you know, how it makes you lazy, yeah. But this is the thing. Does it matter just to the group of people that are here or people that are like us? Or does the consumer care? Just like the stagecoach. When the, you know, the train came in, it just wiped them off the map onto the next level. When the plane came and when everything else came, you know, everything that's left behind gets wiped off the map onto the next level. And the consumer decides, is it great to have great sounding instruments and analog and, you know, speakers that sound have the tube sound? Yeah, maybe to us. But to the person that's buying, you know, the hot new record from Beyonce, do they care that the drums are in the studio or it's a live drummer? Or do they like what they like and there's nothing we can do about it? That's what I got to say.
Nettlesby, you want to add to that? And then I'm going to McSwain after that. I mean McAllister after that. John Nettlesby, did you want to add anything?
Well, I'm here. John Fly is here.
Okay, I know you're here. I'm going to get you next. What about you, McAllister?
Well, I embrace technology because I still use both. I still use my old Tascam 4-track, although you would never know by listening to how the music come out. And I like the new technology because it makes it more convenient and it's easier to use, and I use it real quick. An example. Back in the 90s, I was supposed to finish a song with Roger Troutman. He had to go back to Ohio. As we know, he never made it back. So I never got a chance to finish. But in the same sense, a few years ago, I did a song with Shy Rock in the Funky 4+1. She's in Texas. Her daughter's in New York. Both of them sent me a cappella MP3s. And all I did was put the song together in my room. And the song is funky. So it works both ways.
John Sly?
Yeah. Okay, I think that, you know, of course the technology is going to grow. And I went to the NAMM show, okay, and the NAMM show, and I saw two BAMPs coming back. I saw SSLs coming back, the big boards, okay? And this is just last week. So I think that, yeah, it's going to be more technology, but what I'm scared of, just like what Derek said, I'm scared that it's, you know, the knowledge that we're bringing in, so they can take that and take it to a thousand different levels, is going to be lost, so they will not know how to utilize that technology. Remember, the technology came basically, if you have a plug-in, it existed as a rack mount before it was a plug-in. So do you know how to use it? So, technology is going to grow, and I just hope that the musicians and the artists take what we took and take it to a whole different level. That's what I'm praying and hope for.
Let me tell you guys what I think. If you ever been out to a gymnasium or to a park and you've seen guys playing baseball or football, or you see them playing basketball, they don't get paid to do that. That's what they do. They do that. They enjoy it. It's their leisure. And we can watch some really good cats playing. We say, oh, man, he's bad. But, you know, he's no Kobe Bryant. So he don't get to play in the stadium. He don't get to play at Staples Center. He don't get to play at one of these big arenas. He's got to play on the court. Well, what's happened to us is that musicians who aren't seasoned enough, who aren't ready, they get to play the same court with guys who've been doing this for a long time. So it's misconstrued. Somewhere along the way, we keep making mistakes and thinking that rookies are pros. They have a good game. One good game, and they score 30 points. Got one hit record. They make that one record, Superman. Whatever the record is, and then they got to go back and do it again. But you know what? They're not really pros. They're not really in the league. A guy just happened to play against Kobe one day because he was at the front, and he scored 30 points. Maybe Kobe didn't play that hard. Record business didn't have anything out at that time, and this one record creep through, it's going to make you a pro. See, we have to embrace the technology and use it and continue to be creative. And you guys got to know, there's only 1% of basketball players that are pros. The rest of them are people who are professional in their minds. They're professional in that game. They go home and tell their girlfriend or their wives or their homeboys, yeah, I put 20 up today. But they didn't get paid for it. And that's what we see in music. A lot of people put music up on iTunes, put music on YouTube, putting CDs out. And they ain't selling. Because they're not pros, guys. They're not even on your level. I think we have to embrace the technology. I think we have to take the technology and as pros, elevate the game so high and not worry about anything else, because music is ours. It's ours to make and do what we want to do with it. We can either make it great or we can make it not so great. It's up to us. So I believe that technology is going to grow, it's going to live, it's the best thing that could happen for us. I think as creative people, we're going to, you know, not just from a creative standpoint, but from a business standpoint, it's going to allow us to play on a real even playing field, and it's going to force us to use our minds and our creativity to take it to that next level. So with that, let me show you how technology works. Y'all know Kobe getting a divorce, or he got one. Well, press the button, Lynn.
Three. Hello?
Hello, Melissa. It is me, Sumadre.
Hello, Mara. How was the game last night?
Vanessa, I need to talk to you.
Okay, Mother. What's going on?
Vanessa, maybe we do not want to leave the Kobe so fast.
Mara, I'm signing the papers today.
No, Vanessa, I don't want you to sign the papers.
But Mara, you told me to sign the papers.
I know what I told you, Vanessa, but listen. The Kobe's won last night.
I think they might have found it out to win. They beat the pants off the Clippers, especially in the end. The Kobe hit the big shot. The Ron Artest, I don't like the other name, the World Peace name. I don't like. I don't call him that. I call him the Ron. And I say, shoot the ball, the Ron. Shoot the ball, the Ron. And the Ron shoot the ball. And when the Ron shoot the ball, the Ron make the basket. And the Kobe wins. And the Kobe, he looks very sexy when he wins. Vanessa, we have to get back to the Kobe's. I want you to stop the proceedings.
Mara, I can't do that. My lawyer...
Vanessa, listen to me. I'm Sumadre.
I know, Mara.
Vanessa, listen to Sumadre. I'm very smart.
I know, Mara. I know how smart you are.
Vanessa, if you listen to Sumadre, we might be able to own the Lakers.
Mara, what are you talking about?
Vanessa, I have a plan. I have a plan to win over the whole Laker organization. Now, I want you to listen to me, and listen to me very well. The Lakers need the Kobe's to be a nice boy. I'm going to tell you, tell the Kobe's, stop shooting so much. Okay?
Mara, I don't even talk to the Kobe's.
I want you to talk to the Kobe's.
No, Mara, I don't want to talk to the...
I want you to talk...
Mara,
I want you to talk to the Kobe, Vanessa. Listen to Sumadre. I'm very smart, Vanessa. I have a plan.
Mara, I don't know. I don't know if I want to talk to the Kobe's.
Listen, have you ever seen a stock that is falling like a freaking rock? All of a sudden, bounce back.
Mara, what are you talking about?
The stock market, remember? When I talked to you, about the stock market.
Yes.
I told you the Kobe's is a bad investment, like Enron. Get out, right?
Yes, Mara.
Well, now he's not. Now he's like Apple. He's on his way up, baby. Let's get on this rocket and let's ride it. Let's ride it to the top of the executive chain over at the Laker organization. And what I want you to do is talk to the Kobe's, tell the Kobe's to tell the Lakers to make me senior vice president of everything.
Mara, I can't do that.
Vanessa, I need you to do this for me. Vanessa, we could ban the Kardashians from throwing their vagina all over the league and disrupting the world. Vanessa, you and I have a destiny, and we must seize the moment. God pay them. By the way, have you listened to Garrett White's song, Sister, Sister? I want to make a song about you and I,